Driving Instructors to Vision Zero is part of the Instructor Podcast Network, and as such, I decided to release a very special bonus episode. See, in November 2023, myself and Lee Jowett of Knowledgeable Instructor Training talked for over an hour about the Goals for Driver Education Matrix, the GDE. This was released into the Instructor Podcast Premium. Now, the higher levels of the GDE are what creates safe drivers. So today, on this bonus edition of Driving Instructors to Vision Zero, you can listen to that very recording. Now, if you like what you hear, head over to www.theinstructorpodcast.com, where you can find out more and sign up for a free trial for the Instructor Podcast Premium. But most importantly, make sure that you click and subscribe to this podcast so it drops in your feed on the first of every month, starting in July. So welcome to this first edition of Enter the Matrix, and I've been excited about doing this for ages, just so that I can do all the Matrix fonts and make Keanu Reeves reference and all that kind of stuff. But yes, Enter the Matrix, where we're going to be discussing all things GDE Matrix, which is the Goals for Driver Education. And I'm delighted to be joined by Lee Jowett today. How are we doing, Lee?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm good. Does that make me Keanu Reeves?
No. No, I am Keanu Reeves on this. You may be Lawrence Fishburne.
I like Lawrence Fishburne. I'll be him. I'm happy to be him.
There you go. But I want to mention before we start, actually, that I wanted you on episode one of this because I've listened to people and read stuff and spoke to people about the GDE Matrix before, and you are always a person that makes the most sense to me on this specific topic. So I definitely wanted you on this first one because I'm hoping that if it makes sense to me, it'll make sense to everyone. So
yeah. I will do my best.
Great. But before we start, I want to share my little background around this, if I can, and I'll be interested in potentially in your thoughts and if it's something that you maybe see quite a lot of, because when I took my training, which was sort of 6-7 years ago now, I can't remember anything being mentioned about this at all. I cannot remember it being mentioned at all. So obviously it wasn't gone through in depth, even if it was mentioned. But I think I've always not used it, but used the principles behind it. And the reason for that is going back to my driving test all those many moons ago, because I was not ready for a test in that I could control a car and I could navigate traffic, you know. So if we're talking levels one and two, which we'll come on, so I could do that. But was I mentally prepared for a driving test? No, not a chance. After I passed my test, was I ready? Nowhere near. I was scared as a driver and I wasn't ready for some of the stuff that I came across. But the thing at the time that always struck me was, and thinking back, sorry, was people would tell me that you learn to drive once you've passed your test. So I always assumed that's just what the case was. But when I became an instructor, I really came in with this attitude of, I do not want other drivers to go through that. I do not want my learners to deal with what I dealt with. I want them to be able to plan a route, to be able to work out where they're going and look at the timings of it. Is it going to be a rush hour? When can I plan my stops? You know, well, I need to stop after 2 hours to think about how they're going to feel when they've got people in their car. Because I'll tell you what, I wasn't ready for the first time I had 3 people in my car, especially at the time my ex's sister, who was a fucking nuisance and wouldn't shut up. So I was not ready for that. But I wanted my students ready for that. I probably haven't always been as successful with that as I wanted because I'm learning and getting better myself, but I've always had those conversations. So I think I've kind of been embracing this anyway without realizing it was there. And I think it was last year or maybe the year before where I heard it mentioned, it was probably on a podcast episode, and I thought, oh, that sounds interesting. No idea what it is. Best go find out. So I've done it, looked at it, and it were like, I think I'm kind of doing this anyway, so right, put it aside because no one ever mentioned it, so it can't be all important. And then a few months ago, I started getting people requesting me to do shows, and I'm like, I best look into this. So I've kind of been just digging a bit more around it, looking a bit more into the background, looking at specifically what it is. And I think I'm pretty good with it now. I'm pretty familiar, probably still not where I want to be. But that's where I am with that. So I'll just be interested in your reflections. Like, I think that's something you hear quite commonly about the training and that side of stuff.
In terms of training, there are not a lot of people that, you know, given that me and my business partner, Mick, go up and down the country delivering standards check and client-centered learning workshops, which really are heavily influenced by the GDE matrix. It's the starting point. It's the purpose of client-centered learning. And so it heavily revolves around the GDE, and particularly the higher levels that need to be addressed. We don't see a lot of people. I think we see a lot of people, but we don't see a lot of people that are familiar with the GDE matrix, or certainly that like understand it to anything like a workable level. So that would be my overall experience of it. I first came across the GDE matrix in about 2011. I think personally it took me, I couldn't even tell you at what point I started to sort of understand it to the extent that I didn't have to be looking at it, reading it, and repeating it. You talked about, and it's I always find it interesting, teaching and learning I find just fascinating, but you're talking about sort of learning to drive and your experiences of passing your test. And I always think that where typically and traditionally we went wrong is that we were happy for people just to be doing what we were telling them to do. And I think what you're talking about is, you know, if you look at Bloom's taxonomy of learning, it's going from the lowest level of learning, which is just to repeat what you told, into the higher levels, which is to understand it as a whole thing, and then to understand it and then be able to apply that for yourself individually. But then beyond that is to be able to break it down and analyze it, evaluate it, and use everything that you've learned around something to be able to create new knowledge for yourself, which I think is about hopefully where I am with the GDE matrix now. Whereas when I go back, but we were putting people on the road, I think is the point. We were putting people on the road when they were really just at a point in driving where all they had was the ability to repeat what they'd been told to do by a driving instructor, but not really because the analysis, remedy, and feedback always came from the instructor. So all of that we had to figure out for ourselves. And then you've got everything else, like the higher levels of the G level four, everything about that person and who they are and what motivates them, what influences them, their own emotional states, etc., and how that impacts on their driving. And then you've got beyond that and lower than that, the third level you talked about, having passengers in your car, that changes the context of that particular journey, and that impacts on the person. And then it all feeds its way down into the lower two levels. So I think that's it.
It's fascinating for me. Again, going back to my test and my learning side of it, I think a good example would be sort of motorway driving, if you like, because I had 1 hour lessons. So I had no experience in knowing what it was like to take a journey 3 or 4 hours long being in the driver's seat. Mm. I can remember doing a motorway lesson. It was part of my Pass Plus. And I think that was a 2 hour lesson, but only 45 minutes it was on the motorway. Mm. So I might have had the skills to get up to 70 and maintain a car at 70 and, you know, change lanes or whatever, but I had no experience in managing fatigue of driving and you know, or whatever else you know comes up in that situation. And it's that kind of thing you're talking about, that idea of, you know, we'll teach you to do the bare minimum. You know, I'm gonna steal a Chris Benson phrase again, minimum standards. You know, we'll teach you to do the bare minimum, but you're now gotta go and take that and learn to drive by yourself with all these other external factors.
Yeah, and it is, because you're absolutely right. It's external factors, internal factors, external factors, you know, external from what we were taught, what we were. Motorway lessons, I would probably suggest, were really focused on controlling the vehicle at speed, controlling the braking at speed, MS PSL routines and how they're impacted at higher speeds, Navigating on those types of carriageways, risk increasing factors like following distances, looking and not seeing, like reduced visibility, etc. And, you know, how to evaluate those or being given the evaluation of those from a driving instructor. And that's all well and good because, rationally speaking, if we were being programmed as robots, that'd work. But what about when someone cuts me up and I get angry? How does that impact on me driving? What about the fact that I very, personally, I have very, very low levels of concentration. Just drift off. I really struggle with the monotony of motorway driving. I've had to learn myself what works for me and what doesn't. What really doesn't work for me really is anything motorway-wise over an hour. Doesn't work for me. I mean, I'll have to do it sometimes, but it really doesn't work. In April, we were in Kempton delivering for the ADI and JC at their expo. Mick drove down in the morning in one go. I had to go in the evening and break it into two because I'm sorry, that just wouldn't work for me. It just wouldn't be safe for me. So, but they're things that I've had to figure out for myself. And I mean, there are things that I would have had to have worked out for myself anyway, because somebody can't give you the coping strategies for yourself. You have to find them yourself. But nobody raised my awareness of that. Nobody included any of that in my training. And it's a crucial part. The lower two levels of the GDE, controlling a vehicle and driving it on the road, whilst they contribute to collisions, they're very, very, very rarely the key contributory factor in people having collisions. So, experienced drivers basically don't have collisions due to a lack of knowledge or skill.
We're going to come back to that in a minute, so I want to throw a bit more of this out there first, because I put a poll up on my Facebook page the other day, and it asked, do you have full knowledge on the understanding of the GDE matrix? And 38% of people voted either they'd never heard of it, or they've heard of it, but they've no idea what it is.
Mm.
So that's over a third. I'm trying to do maths. Probably two-fifths not the necessary industry, because not 44,000 people voted, but it was a good sample size. Does that surprise you that many people have never heard of it?
No, the opposite. My experience is more that around 90% of the people that we see have either never heard of it or just don't know anything really much about it. So I would say those figures may be more representative of the smaller audience. The fact that the people that you attract to your podcast are the types of people that probably would be interested. Whereas a lot of people that attend our courses is for the specific purpose that I've got a standards check coming up, or PDIs who have got part threes coming up. And I don't think either party can be blamed, but if you've got a part three coming up and your trainer's not been through the GDE matrix, you can hardly blame a PDI. On the same token, I wouldn't necessarily blame ADIs, because I missed that batch of emails that were about the GDE matrix all the way back in 2011 when the standards came in. And I wasn't a driving instructor in 1999, but my knowledge is that nobody was really made aware of a lot of the research that went into formulating the GDE matrix. So I don't blame instructors, I don't blame PDIs, but it's a sad indictment. And just to go back to what you said earlier, and this isn't a criticism of you at all in any way, but I would implore people who don't have a thorough knowledge of the GDE matrix to not look at it and think, well, it's just what I've always done. Because I promise you, it won't be. There will be elements of it that you will address But the very nature of the fact that when you understand it and how we're supposed to use it, that everything is supposed to revolve around the person, this is where client-centered learning fits in, that it's the person that controls what happens on that journey and what happens in that traffic situation and how they control the vehicle. And that is it's a flip, because then we're not necessarily trying to teach them how not to stall. We're trying to help them understand why they stalled so that they can then, get in there when their emotions take over. And then they're not controlled by their emotions. They control themselves. And that in turn then controls the emotion for them.
I mean, you may not have been critical, but I was being critical when I said it, because that was what I did at the time. I looked at it, I took one glance, and I was just dismissed it immediately, thinking, well, twofold. One, in the that's what I'm doing anyway. Which, as you said, there were elements of that was incorporated, and I was trying to do it, even if not doing it to that standard. But also, no one else is talking about this, so it can't be important.
Yeah.
But that was wrong from me. You know, it's me taking responsibility. I should have looked at that and gone, well, hold on, why is no one talking about this? Let me find out what this is. I could have brought this into the podcast 2 years ago. It doesn't have to wait for people to start requesting it. Do you know what I mean? So it is a bit of self. Don't get me wrong, I'm not kicking myself in for it, but it's understandable. But that was a poor choice on my part, if you like. And it was what a lot of people did when client-centered learning was introduced. Oh, that's what I'll do anyway.
Yeah.
There was almost three responses, weren't there? There was, that's what I'll do anyway. What's this newfangled nonsense? Mm. And then the third one, which is, oh, what's this? I'm going to go learn.
Mm.
And I think the majority of people, unfortunately, took the first two options. But just coming back to that poll for a second, because I think it's relevant that I say this. In that, we touched on this before we started recording, actually, that I think when I put that poll up, I thought, which one would I vote for? And I was thinking I'd vote for full knowledge and full understanding. And then when I stepped back, I thought, well, I couldn't explain this to a five-year-old. Like you mentioned before about the hierarchy of learning, where can you break it down and explain it, or can you break it down and create something new? No. That's kind of what I'm doing with this podcast, actually, but with help. But I don't think I could. So I'm not quite to that level yet. I think I've got a good understanding of it, but I want to get better. So where would you say you were in that? You said before that you think you're at that point of being able to break it down, create something new, and I suppose that's what you're doing in your workshops. Is that right?
Yes. When I wrote the workshop, it doing that really helped me to understand things a lot more. When you're using something that you know, breaking it down, applying it to other things that you know, seeing where it fits in, and then creating something new out of all of that, yeah, that really does help with the depth of your knowledge. That being said, I'm just laughing because I voted on that, and I voted for as well. Now, when you put it the way you put it, I think I could explain it to a five-year-old, but still, I think it's a little bit of a poor choice. Maybe it's a poor choice of option, because maybe they needed to be a third option with that one. No, another fourth option with that one being the fifth option.
You criticize me about this.
Yeah, Paul's rubbish. I just feel like, like when you explain it the way you did, and when I thought about it, I thought, well, I will know more about it. I don't know it fully. That's wrong. I actually don't know it fully. Because all the time I learn more and more about it, and I'll sort of, even just things like competencies and where competencies fit within levels and where they can fit and how you can use them. And so you learn more and more and more all the time. So I'd want to change my vote to maybe the third one.
Well, I accidentally deleted the poll, so you can't change it now. But it's, do you know what? It's interesting. It's scaling, isn't it? And that's my scale. and everyone else has to fit into that scale. But I suppose that's what a poll is. But I suppose it's probably relevant now that we actually kind of talk about the Matrix and explain what it is. Actually, do you know what? Before I even do that, I'm going to say, because you mentioned one thing earlier about, you know, being 10, 20 years old, you know, this has been around for a long time. So when we see these comments about newfangled ideas, it's not a newfangled idea. It's been around for decades. Mm. It's just that people haven't been using it. And then we get the argument, yeah, well, why change what is not broken? Like, yes, but five people die every day on UK roads.
Yeah.
It is broken. We need to change it to make it better. But coming back to the Matrix then, so for anyone listening, I will put a link in the show notes so they can go and get the Matrix. I can print it off. They can have it. They can utilize it. They can see it. But if you are listening to this in a car, think of it as a chart. And down one side, you've got like the, you might have described me. It's like you've got the different levels. So you've got level 1, 2, 3, and 4. And then across the top, you've got this is where I'm not 100% because I'm having to remember what it says. So across the top, it's like knowledge and skills, risk factors, and then self-evaluation with details down the middle. So that's kind of the visual representation of it. How do we utilize that?
Oh, there's a question. I think in terms of utilizing it, my answer to that would be, first of all, that in order to utilize it, I do think it's something that requires a lot of kind of thought and educating yourself around just to understand. I mean, you can go and read. It's 12 elements. You could probably read it in 20 minutes. But again, I go back to when I first became aware of it, and for quite a long time, I could repeat bits of it. I didn't know all of it, and I still couldn't name it word for word, each element, because I don't think that's overly necessary. You can add and take things away from it, depending on individuals. But in terms of the levels and the columns, absolutely. I can't find an argument that every single one of those 12 elements isn't essential for creating safer drivers. And so in terms of utilizing it, my first bit of advice is to educate yourself around it to the point where you know it, and then get some training from people who do know what its purpose is, that fully understand its purposes. And how they can be implemented into driving lessons to help the pupil. Because really, it's about people's behavior and understanding that it's behavior that contributes to collisions, and how we help our pupils beyond rote learning, beyond MSPSL, and how we create client-centered learning driving lessons that aren't overly controlled to the point where the person isn't being who they are or who they intend to be as a driver, because you can be damn sure that when they pass the driving test, they'll be who they intend to be.
I mean, let's just take a look at these levels for a second. So the level one is around vehicle maneuvering, basically. It's the car. And level two is around the mastery of traffic situations, I think, is a definition, which, again, thinking of road and traffic. Mm. Now, for me, those two have always been taught and will always continue to be taught by driving instructors. So just talk to me briefly about those. What do we mean when we're talking about vehicle maneuvering and mastery of traffic? Mastery of traffic situations.
I think the easiest way to look at it is the driving test. Those are the elements that your learners are going to be assessed against on their driving test. They're going to be assessed against their knowledge and skills in terms of how they control the vehicle. They're going to be assessed against the risk increasing factors of controlling a vehicle, or their own demonstrated risk increasing or risk controlling factors of controlling the vehicle on that particular journey on that day. And then they're going to be analyzed against their ability to, or their knowledge and understanding of, how to navigate through traffic, through different types of roads, junctions, etc., whatever's available to those examiners at that test centre, they will make the most use of to see whether people have a high enough level of knowledge and understanding around controlling the vehicle in those conditions. And then again, the risk increasing factors. So you might think of those as fault, driver faults, serious and dangerous faults. And that will determine whether that person is deemed to be fully ready to drive for the rest of their life.
No, if anyone's listening to this, I didn't see your expression as you said that. It was very amusing. What I will say is at the start of recording, I kind of mentioned about I wanted you on this as the first episode, definitely, because I think you explain this better than anyone else I've come across. That explains that. The driving test. That's what levels one and two are. And just touching back on the what you said then, they're ready for driving for life. I go back to my earlier example of I wasn't. Physically, I could drive, I could move a car, I could be in traffic, I could do all that stuff. I was nowhere near ready. But I go back to that phrase I heard, and I'm sure you've all heard, well, you learn to drive properly when you pass your test. Well, why not learn before you pass your test? You're all these instructors, we should be encouraging that. Yeah. Which brings us on to the next one. So the third level is goals and context of driving. So the journey. So what do we mean by that?
Just before I answer that, if I can just say, going back to the driving test, there's three columns. So there's three elements for each of the levels, and the third column is all about evaluation and self-evaluation. And the issue is that even when we sort of teach around the driving test, traditionally with instruction, it was the instructor that was responsible for the evaluation of this is what you did well, this is what you need to improve, this is how you need to improve it. And they're key skills for drivers. They're things that we had to learn. Again, it goes into the higher order cognitive skills, like being able to evaluate and break things down for yourself. We never got there. And on driving tests, see, the issue you've got is whether we like it or not, whether people want to agree or disagree, typically training follows testing models. And so because examiners used to give feedback, instructors used to give feedback, the pupil was never responsible. And then how were we supposed to create responsible drivers when the responsibility for everything was taken away from them?
Well, I'll let you come on to the third level there. I think it's worth mentioning a bit more on that, because I had a real big learn about that a few years ago. And it was before the test, but I can't remember what we were doing. We were doing something, and the student asked to pull up. So I'm like, yeah, of course we can. Pulled up. And she said, I don't know how to say this, Terry, but then you stop being nice to me. She says, what do you mean? She says, well, I just did that roundabout back there. And when we did it, you went, well done. And I'm like, yeah, well, what's wrong with that? I just said, she goes, well, I was going to say that to me on my test. I was going to say that to me after my test. And I'm like, I'd never considered it that from that point before. And I'm like, okay. Oh, yeah, I'll stop. And it was one of the hardest things I'd ever done, because I'm naturally like a positive person. I want to say well done.
Yeah, yeah.
But that was their request. And obviously, it's then trying to bring that into other lessons and how much and when to and when not to. So I think I would have a little question for you, Erin. Is there a time for ADI evaluation? And I'm not talking about a mock test or anything like that. I'm talking about on lessons. Is there a time when we should be going, actually, that was really poor or really good or whatever, or should it be 100% down to the student?
My answer to that would be absolutely yes, based on the fact that my personal view is our general outlook on what we're doing should always be what do you know and what don't you know. Now, if they don't know something, who's going to fill that gap if we don't? Yeah. So every single thing we do, every single bit of input that we give into a lesson should be to explore and examine what they know for them, so that they know what they know. It's a really important bit of learning to know what you know. It takes your learning from the working memory into your long-term memory, to reflect on what you know, think about what you did, what your thought processes were that led you to it. But then equally as important is to fill in the blanks. How many times on lessons do you ask your pupil what went well and they give you one thing, but you know there were 10 things? And that's really important. They need to understand the strengths, because if you put them post-test into a tricky situation, they're not going to want to rely on the weaknesses, but they all know the weaknesses. So we must come in and input and go, well, okay, but what about your speed? I thought your speed was great coming into that, but can you tell me why your speed was good? And can anything that we give, we can then get them to evaluate. And that's where I would look at that in terms of input. I love that your pupil said that. I think what a self-aware person, phenomenal. And probably what she wanted to do was take responsibility for that herself, I would have thought, which is fantastic. Yeah, who's going to tell me well done? I'm going to have to. I want to do that. I want to be the one that's appraising my driving, because when I've passed my test, it's what I'm going to need to do. That's absolutely fantastic. And, you know, and wanting responsible drivers that, you know, that evaluate situations for themselves. Perfect. But yeah, we must input. We must input, because we must fill in the gaps. It's our role.
You think driving instructors, how do I phrase this? They'll occasionally get that one student that doesn't want or doesn't conform to what we're after in that sense. Or they'll hear the horror story from another instructor. You know, we all see instructors online. We can't ask them what they might want to do on today's lesson, because what if they say motorways, you know? And that's the reason why instructors are reluctant to engage sometimes in this type of conversation.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's very difficult to go from something that you know to go into something that you don't know, or that you feel like you don't know. It's very, very comforting to be the font of knowledge. And then, well, the very minute I ask somebody a question that isn't based around knowledge, that's based around their thoughts and their feelings and, you know, and what their opinions are and et cetera, then we're going into the unknown, and that's scary, at least initially. Being told you must move from an instructor-led approach to client-centered learning, that's got to be scary. It's got to be scary for people, and I understand the fear. But all I would say on that is that it's not a massive shift, and my experience is that human beings know an awful lot. By the age of 17, they know an awful lot, and they're very accurate. When I ask a pupil how something went, very, very, very seldom can I remember them not being accurate. And so what it really does actually is it makes our job more interesting. It makes it more rewarding. But the important thing, because none of that's really important, what is really important is that it creates drivers that just instantly look at situations where they're driving and analyze it. And that's the importance of client-centered learning. But yeah, I do understand. I just see you get better as well. Like, it's the question. If you're getting I don't know all the time, it's not the pupil, it's the questions that you're asking. And that's not a criticism of driving instructors either. It's just it's just a fact that if you ask huge questions, it's really difficult to answer. And even if you give lots of time and stay silent, if the question's that big, how do I even broach it? So my advice would be, when you're asking questions, make them so you can start big. I quite like asking big open questions to start with, but then drill down and make it smaller and smaller and smaller. And then you can go back to being big, but make it smaller. What do you want to do today? Wow, that is a huge question. You know, but based on what we did last time and the fact that your approach speed was still a little bit quick, how would you like to address that today? Well, they're going to answer that. You know, how did you feel? Okay, I think. let's go back to you're approaching the roundabout. Do you remember? We had the lorry behind us and that car just started to come to the end of the road. Right. At exactly that point, when you saw that car and you knew the lorry was behind you, how did you feel? You won't get, okay, I think you won't. You just won't, because if you put people in the moment, they will remember exactly how they felt and they'll tell you.
I must admit, I do love a big question. And I am guilty of saying at the start of a lesson, if you could do anything today, what would you want to do? But it always surprised me, the number of students that will say, well, last lesson, this little thing went wrong. Can we going to go work on that? And it's like, I've given you a choice. We could go do more ways if you want. But no, you want to go work on that left turn. You know, but I think that just shows that they are sensible. A lot of them, most of the time, are. And, you know, you mentioned a couple of things there as well. So you mentioned about getting better. And I think that as instructors, we underestimate that of ourselves sometimes in that, or overestimate what we can do. You know, if you've been an instructor and specifically instructing for 20 years, and then you try and change, it's going to take a bit of practice.
Yes.
And there might be lessons where you go, do you know what? Today, I'm just going to have to go revert back to normal to get through this.
Yeah.
I need a break or whatever, or however you do it. And I think that's a really important make. No one's after, well, I suppose long-term you're after perfection, but no one's after perfection immediately. You're after improvement in yourself. And if you're going from a zero to a one, we praise the students for that. So we should praise ourselves.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. It is, I was lucky that in terms of the timing of when I came into the industry and also my focus when I came into the industry, I came in because I always wanted to teach. And when I looked at instruction, I just thought, that can't be it. You know, it can't be it for teaching. There must be more. And so I was really interested in knowing more and understanding more, but I came in at exactly the right time. I qualified in 2010. You know, the standards were published literally 12 months later, and the standards check was introduced in 2014. So I couldn't have come in at a better time for me personally. But I can understand how difficult it is for instructors. And the other thing that we have to accept and recognize is that if I'm a driving instructor and I'm happy with what I'm doing and I'm happy with the results that that gets, what's the problem? I think we have to accept that. I'm 100% on board with anyone who feels that. I'd like to advise them to, you know, can you develop anything? Do you do something every year to develop the thing that you're doing? But it is what it is, you know. If they're happy, the results that they get in, they're happy with, then as it is, crack on doing a good job.
I think Lee Sperry is a really good example of that, in that he had that 100% pass rate and a year of no fails and all that kind of stuff. And then he took a step back and realized, oh God, what happens after test? And it completely changed the way he taught. But now he's a lot more confident in his students after test than he is, you know, was previously. And I think that, so yeah, I agree with what you're saying, but it's, what are they using as a basis of, is it working? Is it a test, or is it how many people die after the test? Or do they even bother to check if they're still alive after the test? But I think the other thing I want to just touch on here before I come back to the level 3 and 4, and I'd be interested if you agree, I think you will, that students, and in fact, we touched on this earlier slightly, at school, they're not, their opinion isn't valued. There's no asking, what do you think about this? The only kind of input they have on their education at all is when they get the choices. And even then, they're massively restricted. So there's no consideration taken to what they want. So when they come to the car and we say, what do you want to do? Or, you know, on a first lesson, for example, or whatever, that's going to blow their mind to a degree. How many times do we get the response, well, you're the instructor? Well, that's because they've always had that from their teachers. Yes. So some people are going to take longer to come around and actually engage with, are there? It's not always going to be an instantaneous response.
I do totally agree. We're a product of our environment. I don't think that the education system sets people up for safe driving. because it teaches us to conform. It teaches us to queue in line. It teaches us to close following distances, you know, et cetera, et cetera. It teaches us to do what everybody else is doing and be similar. And so it doesn't teach us to think for ourselves and to you know, make our own decisions. We just do what we're told to do. But that being said, there is really the fact that when they come to us, the makeup of their brain is starting to change anyway. So they're coming out of being a child, and the principles of learning for children are completely different to the principles of learning for adults, because a child will go to school every day because they're told that's what they've got to do. And they'll take in knowledge and information that has no use to them whatsoever in that moment. Well, you imagine an adult doing that, going every single day because you're told you've got to do it, and taking on information that has no relevance to you at all. You're asking about, you know, the fact that when you ask your pupils what they want to do, most often they'll pick up on what they were doing last time and what they want to improve with it. Because by the time we get into that sort of age and we're getting into adulthood, we don't want to do random, unrelated things. We want to learn more about the thing that was relevant to us in that past lesson. But as driving instructors, we need to appreciate that we're not teaching children. You can't tell an adult what to do. You can't tell them that we're going to go into level 3 and level 4. You can't tell. You can tell them how to control a vehicle. You can tell them what they need to do to control a vehicle in traffic. But you can't tell people how to deal with level 3 and level 4. It is an issue for me. I think it's a huge issue. I think education doesn't set people up for individuality. And you need to be an individual when you're driving a car. If you follow the examples that are out there, you might end up in a lot of trouble. But also on the flip side, they're kind of coming out of that zone as well. And I think it's really important that instructors are aware of that. You're not teaching children. Children will be told what to do. And to whatever extent, you know, all behavior in children can be an issue, but they'll take on board what's been said to them.
I would love to teach someone, teach is a wrong phrase in this context, but I would love to teach someone who has had self-led education, you know, where you basically stay at home, and if your mum says, what do you want to do? And they say, play PlayStation, and then they play PlayStation. I would love to teach someone who has had those choices. That could be a completely different thing. In fact, I'll try to get her on the podcast. It's not been easy. There's a book by Naomi Fisher. I think it's called How We Learn. I think that's the title of it. Amazing book, all about self-led education. It applies so much to what we do.
Yes.
Fascinating. But I'm going to step back to this because I want to touch on these two levels. And I think what we've spoke about there applies a lot, specifically to level 4, but a bit to level 3 as well. So level 3 of the goals for driver education is the goals and context of driving. So again, the journey, essentially.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that.
I'm always more comfortable discussing this after level 4, but I'm going to go with level 3 first and then level 4. Just because, the way my mind works, 4 comes first and then 3.
We can swap around if you want. They're all going to get discussed.
No, it's fine. It's fine because what I can do with it really to help people to understand it is goals and context of driving and journeys and relate it to the first two levels. Well, the easiest way to understand this particular level of the GDE matrix is to once again look at the driving test and consider how many of my pupils on a driving test drive completely differently than when I saw them last week on a driving lesson. How many of them start to change the driving in the weeks leading up? Yeah, it's the context of the journey. it's the context of that particular journey. Now, for me, I think the biggest and best, and this goes into DVSA's syllabus and Unit 1 of DVSA's syllabus, the starting point of their syllabus addresses Level 4 and Level 3 of the GDU matrix. And it says that the emotional responses of the driver, which would be Level 4, can impact on the cause of collisions, and this is what they must know and understand, and that the emotional responses of any passengers can impact on the cause of collisions. Now, that's Level 3. That's the context of a particular journey. I always get asked about context of journeys and whether if you put, for example, a rural road as a contributory factor in collisions, is that not Level 2 because it's the road and they were driving the car on the road? Well, again, I'd go back to the driving test and I'd say, well, that's fine, but why can your pupil do that junction on a driving lesson 10 times in a row with no problem? And then it gets to the driving test and suddenly everything's different. What is different? The only thing that's different is the person sat next to them and the actual context of the journey that they're on. Because there's something on the end of this, there's pass or fail. And we don't know what people's life experiences are around test situations, how they cope with failure, for example, what the thought processes are. And all of those things impact on people's behavior on a particular journey. In terms of the driving test, it misses the biggest learning point that it could possibly make. And again, DVSA will state, but it's not our role to do that. But again, I said this to you before we came on about something else, but perhaps it should be. Why do examiners not turn around? And I get, again, that people say yes, because it's not their role to do so. That's oversimplistic, because maybe it should be. If a pupil within 35 minutes of driving has been dual controlled maybe 3 times to stop a collision from happening, that means that potentially they would have had 3 collisions in a 40-minute drive. Now, granted, that person shouldn't be given a license on that day. But then you think back, well, when was the last time? How far back would I have to go to have used the dual controls with this person 3 times? Probably months. So how's that happened in 40 minutes? Look at the difference. Look at the difference that journey has made to their driving. Now, that's what this person needs to really understand. What happens to your driving? We only put a different person in the car. It's usually me sat there. We've just put somebody else sat there today. And look what happened to your driving. Well, how's that going to be different when they've got 2 or 3 of the friends in the car? It might not be the same emotional response, and it might not have the same impact on the driving, but it will have an impact on their emotional responses, and it will have an impact on the any extreme of emotion, positive or negative, is going to impact on people's driving and the choices that they make. And so that's for me where I hope that makes sense, but that's what Level 3 is all about. It's all about what's happening on that particular journey and the impact that that has on Level 2 and the mastery of traffic conditions, and then the impact that that particular context of the journey has on the vehicle control at that point.
I think that makes perfect sense, and I think that the driving test analogy, again, worked beautifully. You probably saw my eyebrows are like, yes, that makes sense again. And again, that is a really good example of you swap the examiner for someone else. You swap you for the examiner, and you swap the examiner for someone else. So, you know, it could, like you said, it could be their friends in car that are taking the mick out of them. But you think about, even if we take emotions out of it for a second, you think about what those emotions, phrase that differently, you think about what those emotions are doing to the student. They're distracting them.
Yeah.
One way or another, they're distracting them. Mm-hmm. Well, they put their friend in the car that's taking the mick out of them because they've been driving 3 months and they're still setting off from the driver and their friend's still taking mick out 20 minutes later. Well, they're distracting them. Mm. You put an aggressive partner in, they're distracting them. You know, the kid in the back that's screaming and carrying on.
Exactly, yeah.
It's all distraction. It's all taking their attention off what they're driving. And I think so. I think that's a beautiful example. I really do. And it is, I don't think I'd quite connected those dots with the driving test. So that's really resonated for me there. So I suppose how do we, and again, I don't want to go too deep into this. A, you've given us a lot of time already, and B, we'll do another episode on this, but how can we start making it so they can deal better with the context of the drive, i.e. a driving test examiner or whoever else is in the car?
If I can address that after level four,
let's go to level four.
That would be useful.
Yep. Level four, goals for life and skills for driving. I'm just going to shut up and let you take over.
So, this is all about the person. This is the driver. This is who they are. Goals for life and skills for living. The best person that I've had describe what that means in essence to me is Sue McCormack. And the way that she put it was that I could be a person that wants to go to university, but I can't cook, I can't clean, I've never had a job. So I've got all the qualifications that I need to go to university, but if I can't cook, can't clean, I've got low social skills, I've never had a job before, am I going to make it through? That's my goal for life. My goal is to go through university and get this degree. But have I got the skills for living in that situation? And that, for me, was a really nice way of looking at goals for life and skills for living. It's all about who you are as a person and what are your ambitions? What are your aims and objectives? What sort of person are you? And what your personality traits, because guess what they're going to impact on? They're going to impact on your driving. We know, for example, that extremely extrovert characters, they tend to be involved in a lot of very serious collisions. If they're involved in a collision, most typically it tends to be a serious one. It's stopped because they don't deal with mundane particularly well. Extrovert people are kind of always pushing themselves, challenging themselves, and putting themselves out there. Well, they're great sort of traits for certain elements of life, but they're not particularly great traits when you're driving a vehicle. And on the flip side, introverted characters are often involved in minor collisions. If they have a collision, it tends to be minor because they're not the ones that are sort of flying about at high speeds and taking risks, but they tend to be uncertain. They tend to be hesitant and all of those things that can impact. So it's all about who you are as a person. It's all about your own risk increasing factors, your personality traits, also your states. Like I said earlier, that any extreme of emotion is going to have a massive impact on people's driving, be that positive or negative. You know, if you put somebody in a car who's euphoric, I'll have to think that through for a second and think, whoa, that would be extremely dangerous. But that's deemed to be a positive emotion. Put somebody in a car that that's extremely sad. And what we know about when we are sad, we'd take in about 30% less visual. Because we shut down, we close in, we go into ourselves. So we lose not only focus, but we lose visual intake. So again, all sorts of things that impact. I laughed earlier because I just go back to, I did a driver psychology course at Cranfield University with Dr. Lisa Dawn. And she said, I'd never thought of it like this, but she said, human beings aren't designed to drive vehicles. Like, we're not. We do it, but we're not. And the point being that there's all kinds of faults in a human being that you just wouldn't put into. If you were doing designing a self-driving vehicle, you wouldn't give it different driving modes, would you? Like anger mode, aggression mode, excitement. I mean, you just wouldn't do it, would you? But human beings are emotional, and our emotions are 5 times quicker than our rational thought. And this is all what level 4 is about. I want to go back to what I said earlier about imploring instructors to not think this is what you've always done, because I just don't believe it is what driving instructors have always done. To help an individual to understand who they are as a person and the impact that that has on their driving. Because typically we tell people how to drive. That's completely different. You need to let them experience who they are as a person when they're driving a car, and then help them to understand the strengths and weaknesses, the risks, and how all of that impacts on them, so that they can, you know, the third column is all about evaluating and self-evaluating, so that they can then take care of these things for themselves.
It's fascinating. I mean, just what you're talking there, I'm having a flashback to a student I've got. Well, currently, she's just come back to me. She's been ill. But when she first got in the car, and still is at times, absolute gibbering wreck. You know, the idea of driving terrifies her. Mm. But she was really, really confused, because she's like, I never get nervous. I never. She's like, I fly and I go on train, and she's like, I think it's either BBC or Channel 4. I can't remember which she works for them. She has a little bit of presenting, but more stuff behind the scenes. She says, I'm constantly on phone to different people. I travel all over UK. I go all over the world doing this stuff, and I never get nervous. But you put me in a car, I'm getting nervous. And so we try and dig into why, and we've not really worked out like a pinpoint of when it started.
No.
You know, there was no accident. There's nothing like that. But she just got this idea in her brain. She needs to be a perfect driver. And we've spent a lot of time talking about that, and she has got to a point now. I don't need to be perfect. I just need to be safe. She had this idea that I cannot ever make a mistake.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you will. I do. She once saw me do a parallel park, and the last day went atrociously. I said, get out quick, I'm embarrassed. You know, weirdly, I think that actually helped her. But it's that, I think you've said sometimes people getting in the car will act differently because they don't know how they're going to act when they get in a car.
It tends to be that when you put a human being in a vehicle, it actually exaggerates their characteristics.
Yeah.
I would be shocked if this person that you're speaking about doesn't generally in life feel like they need to do everything kind of perfectly, and that they don't generally, in fact, always sort of fear making mistakes.
Yeah.
I'd be shocked if that was the case. The other things, yes, I can totally understand. And if, you know, if you weren't getting there, it might be, you know, at times people sometimes need professional help. That's as, you know, that's as simple as that. But it sounds like you've done the right thing with her. You've focused on her, and you've not just gone, well, that's okay. This is how to control a car, and this is what you need to do in that particular junction. She's learning about herself. She's learning about who she is as a driver. And that's the important thing.
She's my favorite student at the minute by far. She's absolutely fascinating to work with, and there are lessons when we barely do anything like car related. You know, she comes to me and she goes, this is what I've seen on TikTok this week, this scares me, and we'll talk about it, and she'll say, I've been in car with so and so and this happened, I want to deal with this, and you know, well, I'll ask her and we'll talk about it, and it's all that level 4, you know, a bit of level 3. It's not always level 2 and 1. And I've not really put it into the context of this GD matrix until the last week or so.
Yeah.
And especially now as you went through that. So it's fascinating. But I'm going to come on to this question because we've got a question from Les Hopkinson, and I think this will kind of wrap up what we're talking about for today. So Les says, setting goals for a learner is relatively easy for levels 1 and 2 of the GDE matrix. But how can we help a learner realize and set goals based on level 3 and 4 without explicitly telling them what they need to achieve?
I love that question. I think that's a really, really excellent question. And well done, Les, for writing it. That level of thought is... I go back to what I said earlier about imploring instructors to not, how do we look at things differently? Well, my answer would be that first of all is about looking at what actually contributes to behavior. So Well, what we know about what contributes to behavior is these three learning domains is the psychomotor skill that we generally teach, this cognitive thought processes knowledge, which we teach around knowledge. There's understanding, but then there's more to it than that. There's people's thought processes and how their thought processes impact on what they do. But also the thought processes build pictures, and those pictures, so your pupil, going back to your pupil, for example, these thought processes that she's having could be one of the main reasons why she feels differently, because she's having these thought processes about driving a car. Now, when you have a thought process, it builds a picture, and it's the picture that creates the emotion. Without the picture, actually, there's no emotion. It's when your brain creates the pictures, the imagery that the emotions process. And so, yes, part of our role is to help our pupils to understand how the thought processes impact on what they do. And then you've got the affective learning domain. So you've got psychomotor, cognitive, and affective. I've just come up with what I think is a really nice kind of visual of this, because I've took a picture of, I've grabbed a picture off the internet of an iceberg, and you've got what you see at the top and then underneath the underlying elements that are the roots of it. And the psychomotors at the top, so we see what impacts, or we see the impact. We see the effect. So at the top of the sort of sticking out the water, we see what happens to the skill that we're teaching. What we don't generally see, or what we didn't typically cover as driving instructors, was the underlying elements of it, the bits that are underneath, which are the thought processes that created the emotion that led to what was being done. How do we cover this then on lessons? Well, It's the fact that what caused it, rather than dealing with the effect, deal with the cause. I mentioned earlier about a question, for example, like, let's go back to just as you were approaching the roundabout, we had the lorry behind us. We had the car coming to the end of the road. When you noticed that car and you knew the lorry was behind you, so there's your thought processes, how are we feeling? What were you focusing on? And then that becomes your lesson. That's how you set the goal. So instead of the goal being approach speed to roundabouts and getting that right, and I'll talk you through it to start with, your goal could be to not think that car's going to pull out, not think that plane's going to fall out the sky, not think about all the things that aren't happening. So actually just talk me through what is happening. There's a car coming to the end of the road. There's a lorry behind me, so that you're not distracting yourself with things that aren't actually happening, and then focus on what you're actually doing rather than, letting your emotions come to the fore. Or it could be that it made me feel really nervous and anxious, and that what I need to do, my goal is to approach these roundabouts for the next 10 minutes. Using a bit of scaling, being a 3 rather than an 8, and helping them to, without going into too much detail, because we can do that on another one, but helping them to understand what an 8's like to them. What does it mean to them? How does it feel to them? What does it look like within them? How does it manifest itself, and what difference does it make? And then think the same with a 3 or a 4. What would be different? How does that look? Put yourself at a 3 now. What's different? Oh, my shoulders are lower. My arms are less tight. I'm thinking more clearly. I'm seeing things. And then they can go and approach several roundabouts where what they're doing is focusing on feeling differently. So that becomes their specific goal. And so it's not massively different. We just don't only focus on the effect. We look at the cause. We don't only focus on the vehicle control and the mastery of the junction. We look at level 4 and what's impacted on them, and we put that into the goal. And again, it's not that big of a stretch. We start, really, people's journey in terms of learning to drive starts with learning to move the car and stop it. And if you start at level four about them and what they were focusing on when they moved the car for the first time, what the thought processes were, how they felt and what difference that made. And then maybe it goes really well. And then three or four goals later, they stall. And you ask them, what were you thinking about that time? What were you focusing on? I noticed that car reversing off the driveway. Ah, interesting. And how did that make you feel? I think I panicked. Okay. And then what happened? I rushed it. Okay. So if I'm right, what you're saying is when you panic, you start to rush. Is that right? Yeah, I think I do, yeah. And so you start from lesson one, and that's how you do it. Going into next week, they'd be looking at not only improving setting off, but they'd be looking at, you know, I want to be more calm. I want to be less panicked, because that's been brought into the lesson. And I did say I'd finish with an example of something that happened on a lesson, but I don't know whether you have anything that you want to add before maybe I do that.
I'm going to chuck in one quick example on my own, because I do think it's relevant. It's not the goal setting thing, but I think it's relevant because you were talking about words and thoughts, building up pictures. And I think it's relevant because a little while ago, I had a student and driving along, and she's moving over to the left quite a bit. And we spoke about it, and she used the phrase, "The car's coming towards me, make me nervous." And that word towards just was like a trigger in my brain. And I said, okay, do you trust me? She says, yes. Right, close your eyes. Imagine a car coming towards you. Where is it? And she says, well, it's in front of me. I'm like, right, okay. Now imagine a car driving past you. Where is it? She says, well, it's over there. I'm like, okay. So is the car, are those cars coming towards you, or are they driving past you? She says, well, they're driving past me. I says, let's change that wording then. So instead of you telling me the cars are coming towards you, you need to think of it as they're driving past you. As soon as you change that wording from driving from towards driving past, you were fine. No issues at all. And that's just the picture that word towards created in her brain.
Yeah, and that's phenomenal, that, Terry. I think that's brilliant.
Got some praise. I've been criticised for an hour for lead shout, and I've got praise.
No, I do. I think the understanding of that is absolutely brilliant, but it's so true. It's the language, it's the word, it's that one word for you to pick up on that one word and to take that and change that and the difference that it makes. And it just shows you the impact. It's a massive example of the impact that people's thought, but just one word, those cars are coming towards me. And we speak to ourselves. It's like going back to the driving test as an example. Our pupils generally go into driving tests to whatever extent on a scale being nervous. And that's because almost without fail, the majority of the times they've taught themselves into that feeling by telling themselves how nervous they're going to be, by thinking negatively about it. Whenever the thought processes of coming on the approach to the test, they've started to have negative thoughts rather than positive thoughts. And you can see it. You can see it visually coming into the driving test. You can see it the hour before. You can see it 2 or 3 weeks before. And then the examiners see it, you know, on the day. And interesting, change a couple of words. How about we change the word test to assessment?
No, I don't want to go down this rabbit hole now, but I messaged someone today and said,
yeah,
should we change driving lessons to road safety lessons?
No.
No, that was the response I gave, but I liked it. It was an interesting thought process.
I'll tell you why I say no. I don't know why the other person said no, is that it's not what everybody's looking for. And I think when you put those words in and people go, well, that's not what I'm looking for, then that can have an impact on, you know, I don't want to be a safe driver. I want to be a cool driver. And so that can lead to, people just, completely, what's the word I'm looking for? So it's almost like a backlash to it. Once they've passed the test, should we is maybe, it's maybe a good way of wording it. Because really we should, if we were teaching or programming robots, that's what we do. But the issue is, yeah, human beings, which is just complex mess of opinions, experiences, and attitudes, and all kinds of things that impacts on our intentions. So
it's one of those things that's fascinating to think about. But I know you wanted to finish with an example, so I'll let you come in with this.
Yeah, so this happened. I was sat in the back of a PDI's lesson. It was early this year. And for me, it was a really great example of where we need to go in driving lessons and how we need to approach the GDE matrix. The merit report states that we must take a top-down approach. So we start at level 4. There is a fifth level to the GDE matrix. Some people might be sat there going, well, why aren't you talking about the fifth level? Largely because it's just an extension of the fourth level, but it's about people's social settings and driving for work and things like that, which we know has a massive impact. 1 in 3 collisions involve someone who's driving for work. But also, to my knowledge, it's just not accredited. So it's not widely available because the other elements have been peer reviewed and accepted and accredited, whereas the fifth level is just kind of out there and it's an extension of the fourth. So a top-down approach would be level 4 working downwards. The person, so I'm sat in the back of this lesson, and within about a minute I'm sort of thinking, this girl's good, she's a bit quick. And that theme went on through the lesson, and she was pulled up several times by the PDI, and they discussed speed and use of speed and speed on approach and slowing down earlier and etc. And the one word that I kept hearing over and over, well, two words, was it's busy, and so I panic, and then she rushes. That was part of a conversation that they had, and the word busy, busy kept coming out every time we were in traffic. Oh, it's busy, busy, I'm panicking. It's busy, I'm panicking. And when she panics, she rushes. She rushes because it's busy, and then she panics, and that's when things start to go wrong. Anyway, she was finishing the lesson at work, and we pulled up in front of work, and I'm just looking at this work, and I'm thinking, oh my God, there's the answer. There is your answer sitting right in front of your face. She works in a hairdresser's. So before she got, I said, do you mind? Can I ask you a couple of questions? She said, yeah, sure. I said, is that where you work? She said, yeah. I said, does it get busy in there? Yeah, it's always busy. Okay. And when it gets busy in there, do you panic and rush? No. Well, that's interesting. Why? Well, I can't rush somebody's echo. I can't panic and start rushing people's echo. I'll get sacked. Interesting, though, that when it's busy in the car, and she went, oh, yeah, see what you mean? I'm like, yeah, so you need to take what you do in there and put it into here. Because if you don't, yes, you might get sacked in there. But what's the worst that could happen to you in this car or in your own car? What we don't do as human beings, and what we need to do, and I was saying earlier about the competencies and linking the competencies, I'm starting to think that my favorite competence on the standards check report is, were opportunities and examples used to clarify learning outcomes? There was an opportunity. There was the biggest example that she could get to clarify what she needed to learn, what she does in life outside of the car. And it's so much about the person, level 4. And the reason why we need to work downwards is that level 4, who she is as a person, really impacts on the context of the driving that she was doing at the time and what she did in traffic and her ability to control the vehicle. But also in level 4, she's got the answers. She's got the answers for herself because she deals with it every single day. She just hasn't applied it yet. She wasn't given the example so that she could apply that to learning to drive herself. So yeah, that's my example. It was really like a wow moment when we pulled up outside the hairdressers.
Love it. And I love wow moments. And today has been a complete wow moment for me. I joked before saying that we're going for 2 hours, but we're not a million miles off.
No, we're not.
All right. Do you want to tell all of my lovely premium members where they can find you if they want more Lee/Kit goodness?
Yes. They can find me at our website is adikit.co.uk. My email address is lee@adikit.co.uk. They can also find KitMag, which is our monthly CPD magazine. We've got the Kit Podcast, which is a supplement to KitMag. So everything that you find in KitMag, you can find on the podcast as well. And yeah, you can just see me on Facebook and you can come to our courses. We go all over the country. We're in Southend and Cambridge in November, Manchester and Pontycratt in December, and then next year we're kind of everywhere. Scotland, Cornwall, and everywhere in between. So
well, I think I've mentioned this. Well, we've spoke about this before. At some point next year, I will be attending one of your courses, even though I don't like the interaction side of it. It's public. I will be attending.
Yeah, you can come and sit. You can just come and sit at the front with us. It's absolutely fine. You don't have to.
Don't leave me up front. You want me tucked away in the back somewhere.
Well, it's fine.
All the links for that will be in the show notes. And one quick secret for you. I listen to the podcast at the, I like the ones you do where you're reviewing KitMag.
Yeah,
but now I'm at the point where I just fast forward to your review of my bit just to see what you said about me. yeah, for anyone listening, all those links will be in the show notes. And thank you for today, Lee. It's been brilliant.
No, thanks a lot, Terry. Thanks for inviting me on. Hope it's helped people to understand it. And if they need any more, I'm always there.